Are you ready?
Funny.
Expensive.
Wanna.
Whatever.
Be happy.
Hey everyone. Welcome to the first episode of The Funny Papers. This is a podcast about the classic Nickelodeon, then later Disney animated TV show Doug. Many of you probably have fond memories of the show, and if you don't, that might actually be for the best. My name is Mike, and joining me are my two best friends, Sam, our resident Doug expert, and Jim, a relative newcomer to the world of Doug. As for me, I watched the show a fair amount during the Nickelodeon run, and I remember enjoying it from a high level, but I'm a little fuzzy on the specifics of the show. This is a topic we've discussed doing a show about for 10 years, and we thank you, gentle listener, for joining on this journey through the past and through our minds. We were recording this long distance and doing it mostly as an excuse to get together and bullshit about nonsense, but also doing an exercise in big psychology and nostalgia critique. Sam, why don't you start us off and give the people an introduction to your relationship with Doug and makes this show so special in your giant Doug brain.
So I watched the show a lot as a kid, and then there was a big period in my life where I just didn't watch it, obviously, because I grew up. So up until about college, maybe a little bit after, I thought it was a pretty good TV, pretty good kids TV show. And then one of my friends called it aggressively mediocre. And I got a little offended at that because I remembered enjoying it. So I decided to go back and watch the first episode and, oh no. Oh no. And then the other weird thing about me with Doug is that I remember like every single fucking detail about this baby show. Like when I was doing research for this show, I was just skimming through the Wikipedia and like looking at the titles of the episodes, and I could just read the title and be like, oh yeah, this is when Doug does this, or oh yeah, this is when Judy does that. And I have no idea why this is happening to me.
Well, hopefully we'll find out in this magical journey together. Now, Jim, before we started the show, before Sam and I were talking about it, and we were like, Jim, you have to be in this show about a TV show that you don't care about or know anything about at all. You had never really seen Doug, as far as I know, or at least very minimally. How about you give us a short description of what you think about this show?
Okay, so as you just said, I never watched this show. I saw half an episode once, thought, eh, whatever, and moved on with my day to digest more intellectual fare, like Magic School Bus and Animaniacs and Biker Mice from Mars. Then I went to college with two weirdos who would not stop talking about it, and then they told me we were doing a podcast about it, and then I watched the first episode, and now I have questions.
Perfect. And we will be getting into all those questions and more over the course of this recording. Now, what we did individually is we watched the first episode of Doug, took notes, and then got together to discuss our thoughts and decide what was so special about this show. Episode one is called Doug Bags a Nematode. This is the episode where Doug first moves to his new hometown called Bluffington and meets the iconic cast of characters and best new friends and rivals. Now, with any good high fantasy story, Doug begins with a map. It's also a story that has characters with absurd names, which is, you know, very important in high fantasy.
Very important note to chime in here. We are informed that the person who created this show, Jim Jenkins.
Correct.
Jim Jenkins is not a real people name. That is a name somebody comes up with when they look at, what's your name, Mr. Jim? Jim Kins. Like, no, this man is working under a pseudonym, and we must figure out why. And we learn very promptly why.
At the beginning of this episode, Doug is staring at a map of how to get to Bluffington, which, first off, you know, they made Doug the navigator, I guess, for this journey. And I don't know, based on what we later learn about Doug, that seems like a little bit of a risk that he might just slip into one of his fantasies. But anyway, so we look at this map. It has a bunch of weird names in it, like, there's like, what is it, like South Hampster? Like,
oh, let me get you. Like, the map shows you House Dressing, Pee Wee, Diphthong, Bluffington, and Muddy Shoe. Lying just off map are Hard and, most sinisterly, Big Gnat. We do not know how Big Gnat is finished, almost all of the possible answers are sinister.
Right. There's also a section of the map that's like circled in red and like hashed with red marks. And like, I mean, that might be an actual topographical symbol, but to me, that just says like danger zone, yeah. Like quarantine
zone.
Yeah, the
Bluffington containment zone.
Right, definitely.
That's where all the muties go. Oh yeah, did they ever say like what town he was moving from?
No, they just said that it was from his old hometown, which was basically perfect.
Right.
And that's something that demands digging into a little bit. Uh-huh. Like, Doug, one of his like key things is that, you know, he's really like anxious about a lot of things, which is totally fine. Like, he has a lot of like thoughts about how things could be better than they actually are. But in the intro, he says, "My old life was basically perfect." And I'm wondering how things changed. Like, did he still have these, like...
Did he still have his visions? Were his visions brought on by his travel to Bluffington? Did the process of traveling to Bluffington give Doug access to the spirit realm?
Using my big Doug brain, I can tell you that I'm about 95% sure that none of his friends from his old town ever show up, ever. Which I get, it's the 1990s, can't really text anybody, but like, that seems like a good, you know, plot device. The friend could like hate Skeeter, and the Skeeter could hate the friend, and then they all come together at the end for ice cream. That's a very good Doug episode.
That's true. And given that they never do that, like, that kind of speaks to a very good Dev Gang episode never really happening, because there's never really like stakes.
Uh-huh.
Like, another, like, just a feature that gets brought up during this ride is that Doug's dad is moving to be a mall photographer, which, okay, I've been informed that a mall photographer was like actually a job in the 90s, but like, was he moving up from the wherever the hell it was mall photography shop to the bigger and brighter big city that is Bluffington? Like, what kind of an old job do you have that your kid, of course, looks around and says, "Yeah, my life is perfect." And you are moving off to, "Yes, I'm going to be the mall photographer in this other indistinct 90s wasteland." And you say, "Yeah, hell yeah, this is perfection. This is a better world."
Well, it could also be that, you know, he was working some, like, dead-end job, and then he learned, hey, here's a thing that I'm actually interested in, and this town has 20,000 people in it, so there's actually a chance for me to get to do it, because there's no other photographers in this dang town, so they're going to bring me in, right?
Living in the big city.
Of 20,000 people.
Also featured on this map was the small town of Bumpo, which would normally just be an okay who gives a damn, but then they drive over a bump, and given what we've already established about the potential spirit realm aspects of this, wait, did they just drive over the entirety of the small town of Bumpo?
It's a big metaphorical thinker show, so I wouldn't doubt it. Maybe an entire civilization was wiped out in the first throwaway 10 seconds of Doug.
Look, as a citizen of Bumpo, I resent these salacious accusations about my hometown. Go Beavers.
Go Beavers. Let's move on from this map then. Let's move in when they first arrive at their new home in Bluffington. They roll up and they've got a moving truck with movers with them, and they start unpacking all their things and just throwing it on the lawn, right? They're not moving it into their house. They're just like throwing their couch and their piano and like everything they own onto the lawn.
"I claim this place in the name of the Funnies!"
Which is also the point where we get properly introduced to Doug's older sister as part of what I can only describe as an unstuck in time moment. Because the sister is a, what in modern day terminology would just be a, like, hipster? Like, what even is she? Like, she's just a...
She's a thespian.
Yeah, I think she's, like, supposed to be a beatnik, but, like, beatniks stopped existing, like, 40 years before the show came out, so...
Yeah, like, it's... The sister is unstuck in time. I can't decide whether she's from modern day or from, like, 60 years ago. It's unclear. But in any case, there is, for no apparent reason, there is a cow on site. This is the source of a gag, as our theatrical Doug's sister. Did they ever give her first name?
Judy.
Judy, thank you.
Duh.
So Judy just signed a sits up there, it's like, ah, the air is rich with the scent of possibilities. And then there is a magnificent joke as we see that the scent of possibilities is actually the cow, and the cow is stinky. And the cow is eating hay out of a moving box.
Give me strength.
Did you get that, guys? The cow is stinky. That's a Doug joke, because the cow is stinky. That's as good as you're going to get. We have to watch 50 fucking episodes of this show.
Don't sound too excited, but I'm
know
excited
them
about
all
it.
Already.
Such sights you have to show us.
God.
We're happy to share this with you. I think this will just be a nice bonding experience.
And the important and the thing that just drags you as you go forward is, wait, why is there hay? Why did they bring hay? Why did they bring hay for a cow to eat? And is the cow going to be a part of this? I don't think the cow shows up again.
Better question, is there actually a farm in Bluffington?
They're like, in the suburbs.
Is this cow... they are in the
Why
suburbs.
Why is there a cow there?
Maybe the cow lives in one of the houses. Maybe it's a domestic cow, like it's someone's pet, right? And maybe they brought their own hay because they were like, what if someone has a pet cow?
Look,
here?
The Homeowners right? Association clearly states that you cannot have a cow as a pet.
Shit.
Damn!
they got us.
This is our first marker of the fact there is something deeper and more sinister going on in Bluffington. Because why did they need to bring hay for a cow? Why did they know a cow would be there? What is even going on here?
Look, maybe they just brought it on the off chance that they'd need it. Like, they're escaping from that quarantine zone that was on the map, and they're on their way to a new life, a life where they'll have to rebuild society.
Also, they make a remark about, you know, Doug eventually has to go get burgers for the family, and there's, like, a clear layup joke about the cow, hamburgers, something about that, but no, it's just, like, thrown to the side. The cow shows up
Shit,
in the picture.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, the cow shows up in the picture, and then the cow's done. The cow might not well have ever existed. Just insane.
Yeah, no. Like, okay, hold on. So Doug comments, "Mom was just trying to make lemons out of lemonade."
But then the mom just tells the workers to get to work. Like, just totally disconnected from each other.
Yeah, can I please speak to your manager? Says Doug's mom, firmly cementing this as the 90s and suburban Republican territory. Yeah. But
lemons out of lemonade.
Lemons out of lemonade. Demanding the
work.
Demanding the workers do their jobs for me. I don't even, like, it doesn't make sense. Doug already is having serious unreality issues.
So let's move on through this to the first major plot point that occurs in Doug. After they're, like, you know, midway through throwing all their shit on the lawn, Doug's dad says to Doug, "Hey, say, Doug, we're all hungry. How about you go get us some fast burgers?"
Which I'd like to jump in and say that fast burgers is a way of referring to fast food that nobody on the face of the planet has ever used before or will ever use again. It is just bizarre. Like, you start wondering, is this guy speaking in code? And then you realize, wait a goddamn second, he just told his son, "You need to go get us food?
Doug, I'm hungry! Doug, go take your bike to McDonald's!"
Just go out there. Go out into the wide world and fetch us food. Yeah, sure, I could do that. I've got a car. I could take us somewhere. But you've got to go and get us food. With no understanding of where anything's at. This is his first time in a new area. On his bike that he has to use the basket to transport his dog. Like, are you just trying to get him out of the house?
Let's take a minute and address the dog real quick.
Poor Chop.
Porkchop. Porkchop is the dog. He's a major player in the show. He's often portrayed as one of the smartest characters in the show. He's often the one that, like, solves the problem that is happening in the episode. And Porkchop also moves in with a whole host of his own things.
Yeah, he's got TVs. He lives in an igloo, which is nicer than my place, which is just a box. I assume there isn't trash and laundry on the ground. Where he sits at his desk, I assume he's not surrounded by coffee cups full of grime. I'd say it's probably perfect.
What a life.
Like, the dog is also just weird because it's your first glimpse that, okay, they're kind of trying to do a Peanuts thing, except for the whole deal with Snoopy and Peanuts was that Snoopy existed in his own fantasy world and only intersected with Charlie Brown's world occasionally. Porkchop is more a denizen of Bluffington, as far as I can tell, than Doug is.
But they don't count him as a citizen when they first move in. Because when they move in, there's a sign that ticks over and shows that four new people have moved into the city, and Porkchop is not among them, even though he is the smartest, most capable character in the entire Funny family.
Also, it tells you that Bluffington is a surveillance state, because it, the fucking census, like, it changes in real time. Like, they're watching you come into the town.
Population 20,001. I guess the one is me.
Me. Sam, you did mention previously that this was set in, supposedly this is supposed to be in the Virginia area.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a suburb of Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, so maybe this is just a place that's associated with one of the national defense contractors. Maybe this is a fun little gag they do. We're always watching you here.
Shit.
You will always be monitored, Doug.
I didn't even think about that. That's defense industry is like a huge thing in Richmond, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. My brain's now moving.
Later, we'll get into it. We learn what the biggest industry in Bluffington is. We'll get into that in just a moment. Now that Doug is on his grand quest, Doug is helped by a friendly spirit who approaches him. Am I missing anything before this happens?
No. I think it's time that we met the main character of the show.
Yeah, so Doug is, introduced to... His new next door neighbor, Bud Dink, who says, "My name is Bug Dink. You can call me Mr. Dink," which is quite a presumptuous way to introduce yourself.
For those of you who haven't watched the show, Doug, like myself,
don't.
One, why are you listening to this? What the hell is wrong with you? Save yourself while there's still time.
But thanks for listening.
Yeah, also that. Two, the way he talks is in this entire bizarre way of talking, like I can't even do it properly.
Bonjour, welcome newcomer.
Like, it's just this bizarre, like, the overall impression you get is that you're surprised this man is allowed to live in proximity to children.
Mr. Dink never speaks to Doug's parents, ever. And I don't know if he does in later episodes, but you'd think that, you know, when you're introducing yourself to your new neighbors, you would talk to more than just their, like, a freshman in high school?
No, is that what no, he's in sixth grade.
Doug is in sixth grade.
He's 11 years old.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you, expert.
No problem. So... I also want to point out that Mr. Dink introduces himself and then immediately goes, "Hey, Doug, let's watch some videos at my place."
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So rather than like say, "Hi," you know, and it would make sense, like the first person you run into is your neighbor to be like, "Hi, I'm Bud Dink. You can call me Mr. Dink." And then let's meet the rest of your family. It's "Come with me, young man. Time to go watch a video in my house that will educate you about our town."
So I can tell you where the McDonald's is.
Yes, yeah. That's it.
The McDonald's, yeah.
Right, because he asks Mr. Dink, he
Not
says...
Not at all Comet Ping Pong, the McDonald's.
Right, because he says, like, the impetus for this is Doug says, "Can you tell me where I can get some fast burgers?" And Mr. Dink says, "Come watch this video that I have that will tell you where the burgers are."
What's also funny is, like, half the order is burgers.
Yeah.
They get, like, chicken sandwiches and like, we're jumping ahead a little bit here, but they get four grape sodas, which is just psycho shit.
It's entirely possible that Doug's family are juggalos, reinforcing my understanding that this is, in fact, Homestuck adjacent. But moving on.
Oh, man. But anyway, okay. So we also meet Mr. Dink's wife, Tippy Dink, who just
fucking is done with Mr. Dink shit. Like, every time Mr. Dink says anything, which all writes to her, like, she is correct, that she just goes, man, like, fuck off. Like, shut up, Mr. Dink.
Who writes your material, dear?
Like, yeah, that, yeah. It's the reason why you end up coming to the conclusion that, okay, maybe this guy is legit insofar as his wife appears to have most of his desires somewhat on lock.
Right. They could be viewed as this cute couple that, you know, they balance each other out. But in this moment, that's how we get, that's how we see the two of them. We see Mr. Dink as this weird character and his wife Tippy as the voice of reason in their relationship.
One thing I didn't remember about Mr. Dink is that he announces that his job is he's a writer. And I didn't remember that at all.
Yeah.
Wait, does he? What did he say anything about what he writes?
No, which is very, it's like one line, I'm a writer, by the way, or something like that. It's at the end of a sentence.
And he's the wealthiest writer known to mankind living in this.
That's what Dink stands for, is dual income, no kids.
That's right.
Right,
okay.
right.
I'm using my massive Doug brain power here. Finally. This is like an exorcism for me.
I mean, honestly, that's the point of this show. Right. Is to excise these memories that have been just...
And just force them into my brain. And just, there you go. Good call.
Right, Jim, after this, you can start another show in which you talk to some other people about Doug.
The Doug virus spreads.
But you'll be cured.
Oh, no. I'll be doing mine on Homestuck so I can poison some people with that.
No. I don't want to be on that one.
I didn't want to be on this one. You reap what you sow, motherfucker.
Anyway, Mr. Dink, you better call him Mr. Dink. He brings our hero, Doug, into his home.
Into his house!
Yes!
To give him directions!
Through a very inefficient means.
He's 11! God damn it!
Look, Mr. Dink is a writer, and he couldn't write him the directions.
And just, you got a picture that the funny mother and father just looking at, like, oh, look, our son, who we sent out to go get food, is just wandering into the neighbor's house with this strange man he's not met before. Oh, there's nothing to worry about here.
Let the boy make friends.
With a very large purple man.
So, okay, to that end, there's something later. I really want to remember that you said that because I don't want to bring it up later, but there's something that happens about that. This is foreshadowing, dear readers. I need you to remember that Doug's parents just want him to make some friends. But anyway, we're moving into Mr. Dink's house. Now, Mr. Dink's catchphrase, as you may remember, is very expensive.
Very expensive.
Everything in his life and in his home is very, very expensive. So Mr. Dink pulls out his very expensive TV out of like some strange contraption. So this brings us to... home video. This is a video, by the way, that is distributed to all citizens of Bluffington. Bluffington is the town, and in case we haven't covered this, Bluffington is the hometown that we are moving to. This is Doug's new home. And all citizens receive a video that talks about the best features of Bluffington, narrated by the dear mayor.
Mayor Bob White, who absolutely appears on the Lolita Express flight logs no fewer than 5 times.
Hello, I'm Robert Bob White, mayor of Bluffington.
Bob White is absolutely an incredibly sinister presence who is tied into some kind of... We'll get there.
Hey, Jim. Jim, just really quick, what political party do you think Bob White is part of?
Bob White...
I have an answer for this, but...
Like, I don't have enough context. The problem is he's a small-town shithead mayor, so he could be from fucking anywhere. So okay. My question would be that, I'd have to know what industries are biggest in Bluffington. Wait, no, they mentioned that.
They mentioned that, and I want to get into this. So, but go on.
Yeah, no, but, like, remind me what that industry is, because I do want, that'll probably be where you go for politically on this guy.
Bumper sticker factory. It's the bumper sticker capital of the world. Oh, I guess it's a screw factory. One person owns basically everything in the town, like the Bluffs.
Yes, it is. It is Bluffco, and Bluffco
and Bluffington.
Owns Bluffington. No. Bluffco is the name of this factory that makes screws and or bumper stickers.
Also, air conditioning units. We find out in a later episode. It's just like a fucking, like, it's a factory that wouldn't exist in 1990.
So it's an Omnicore bullshit. The problem is that depending on where you're, oh no, we're in the 90s, so Virginia is still solidly a red state. So I'm pretty sure he's a Republican.
You're in the suburbs of Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah.
And the mayor is an incompetent buffoon, and the family goes to church every Sunday. What political party do you think it is? Also, Tippy Dink eventually becomes the mayor, which is one of the two of the three things that happens in the show. And Tippy is like a rich person also from the suburbs, but is competent. Now, if you're going to make a competent person take out an incompetent person from the perspective of like a Christian political family, what do you think that Bob White is? He's definitely a Democrat. He's Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I guess that's the way you got to play it, especially since, like, I'm just looking in terms of overall context. You're in Virginia, so at the time, Virginia is still a pretty solid red state, and so you have to assume all the machine politicians are still pretty red, and you would still have the possibility of the insurgent Democrat. But, yeah, no, under the context of this, yeah, Bob White, I have no difficulty believing, is Bill Clinton, particularly down to the, like, down-home folksy charm, just a cutout for the actual power players.
Yes.
I also believe that he's super Bill Clinton just because at the time, like, basically every cartoon, like, made fun of Bill Clinton and, like, made, like, caricatures of him. Like,
yeah,
he was in the intro to Animaniacs, right?
Right, right. And also because if they were going to do a Bush the Elder knockoff, they would have made him significantly less charismatic because, good God, that man could not talk to save his life.
Yeah.
This concludes our line of the politics of Bluffco.
Well, hold on. There's something else I wanted to mention about Bluffco, is that the city is owned and operated by Bluffco, like, in its entirety, right? So that means they name their cities off of their primary industries. And based on that, back to our map, who owns Liver City? Like,
My God.
Right?
It's the livers.
The livers.
Duh.
Obviously.
It's where the human farms are.
Yes. The child organs have to go somewhere after they are processed in the basement of the Honker Burger.
The Honker Burger.
Honker Burger. I ask you, has there ever been a more sinister name for a fast food joint?
Arby's.
Arby's isn't sinister, it's dumb. It's still, like, the innate...
Burger King.
Yeah, okay, good point. The Burger King is tied to a number of secessionist movements.
Dairy Queen. I'm just naming fast food restaurants now.
Wait, what was that one?
Dairy Queen.
It's the Dairy Queen. It's a little indie gem you may not have heard of.
Okay, so there were some other things in that video. Like, nothing about that, the rest of that video seemed like super off to me. Did anything else seem off to you guys?
Yeah, nothing else seemed weird until we got to the Honker Burger segment, which is just...
It was probably just a vehicle to introduce the mayor, but I mean, the mayor doesn't have any payoff, because, you know, nothing in this show has any payoff whatsoever.
Well, it's also a vehicle to introduce that there are nematodes. There are...
There's the payoff.
Yeah, so we should say something real quick. The title of this episode was Doug Bags a Nematode. This is going to be the first mention of what a nematode is. It is just like apparently some like chupacabra of Bluffington, right? It's like something that lives in the swamp and who knows what they are.
Named,
the mayor's talking about
named
this.
After a parasitic worm.
Fuck yeah. All right. So now... We finished this episode and okay. Oh, hold up. So they finished the movie. They finished the video and they also introduced the Honker Burger. All they say in this is basically, this is like, yeah, this is McDonald's, but it's where all the local teens hang out.
Not even teens, preteens.
Yes.
Right. All the local
this
preteens.
This is where we store the local preteens. We speak in codes. Adults are told to send children to the Honker Burger if they ask to go somewhere. There's nothing suspicious here at all.
Honk honk.
Honk honk.
Honk honk.
But hold up. So, one thing I just remembered about this is, so they finish watching the video, right? And then Mr. Dink tells him where the fucking Honker Burger is.
Uh-huh.
He just gives him directions.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He says, like, here's, I just remembered
that's,
this.
That's
like,
prime Doug.
Right. So, like, the video, like, sure, it was, like, it was a way to introduce the town at large, but you'd think you'd learn that organically as the details became necessary.
You could just say, like, while they're driving through, like, driving into Bluffington, it's just this home of the nematode. You do that in a scene. Like, not, I'm sorry, a frame. You do that in one frame. Do you feel like your time has been wasted? That's Doug. That's the Doug experience.
So what does that make this?
An extremely productive use of your time, gentle viewer.
Thank you, dear reader.
Please, please don't go. Yeah. Our brains are dying.
Anyway, so Doug takes his bike.
He won't smell toast.
Not yet. So Doug then rides his bike over to the local Fast Burgers Honker Burger joint. Now on the way, is this where he has the vision on the way?
Yes, he has the vision on the way.
Okay, so he has Doug. Okay, so this is a theme of Doug as a medium. He often has little visions where he sees himself in situations that he imagines could happen, or that, like,
he imagines himself in a slightly cooler TV show.
Yeah.
Where something happens.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So in this particular scene, though, he rolls up to the Honker Burger, and does he, like, make, I forget, does he, like, say an order or something?
He rolls up to a stop sign, and then he thinks about, what if all the kids laugh at me?
But what if they don't like me? What if I don't fit in? What if they think I'm a doofus?
Which is Doug has two character traits. One is he has an anxiety, and this is anxiety at play, because his first imagination sequence in a show about imagination sequences is everyone in town laughing at him. This is what the kids call big psychology.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's true. Like, it's definitely like a very anxious show. And I think that was kind of the point of it, was to, like, let it be known that it's okay for kids to have, like, anxious feelings, you know, that we all go through that. But it was just done in, like, kind of a ham-fisted way, right?
There's no story or jokes. There's just, I mean, the entire show is just a vehicle for a moral. That's it.
Right, right. Okay, so to be fair, though, I think it was important to, you know, show that it's okay to be anxious.
No, absolutely,
and, like, show that...
absolutely. But I'll get to that in a second.
Okay, cool. But one more thing about this little vision that happens is the way that they phrase that that Doug is being made fun of is they use the phrase, "Let's honk this loser out of town." And I love that phrase, because it's like, and they all, and everyone in there in this vision has little bike horns, and the way, and it's the mayor saying it.
He chose the path of the loser.
Yes, he did. That's right. Chose the path of the loser. Like, this is some mysticism shit, right?
Yes. This is some ritual shit. This is some ritual sacrifice shit. This is some I want to see the Honker Bergen's basement shit.
And didn't it, now that I come to think of it, in the video, didn't the mayor mention that there's, like, a lot of mysticism in the town? Like, he said,
yeah,
that
was the nematode thing, was just all about how, yeah, there sure is, well, I haven't been able to find one, but you never know what you'll be able to find in this town. Wink, wink, you, the viewer.
but he specifically used the phrase mysticism.
Superstition. He uses superstition.
Superstition. Ah, oh, shit. You're right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Superstition. There's nothing weird going on. Nothing weird going on. Nothing weird going on.
Nothing weird going on.
Yeah. So, and then he wakes up from this vision, and all the cars are backed up behind him because he's been in this trance, and oh, what a funny moment where Doug is causing problems for the populace at large.
Biking in the middle of the street, by the way.
Right. So Doug arrives at our prestigious Honker Burger. Sam, do you want to go into how he orders it, or is
that? So no, I got it. I got this because I'm about to get really mad. So he
goes imagine
up, he goes up to the cashier and just says, "Hey, I want like two hamburgers and one without pickles and a chicken sandwich and then four grape sodas." God damn, that makes... Oh no, sorry. Okay, so he says that, and then the counter person is like, "What are you talking about? What is that?" And then he starts getting anxiety, and then Skeeter comes up and just, like, unloads just gibberish.
"The new kid wants three new cows, one no cukes, one no sneakers, one wet one, four tubers, and four for the vine."
Like, there's some, like, coded language that they use to order food. And what's, like, fucking infuriating is...
"And one, and a wet one. Give him a wet one. Give the new man a wet one."
It pans to the computer, and the computer has just the regular names. Like, they know what it is. Like, they push the button, the regular name comes up. God damn it!
There is a joke here that is, I think, the first actual joke in the show, where at the end, Dog asks, like, "So, how do you order a table salad?" It's like, "And one table salad." And okay, that's kind of a joke, but whatever. And then the animation is such that it's the highest quality moment of animation in the show just far, because Skeeter looks incredibly smug. Just so pleased with himself that he knew how to order a salad. That's me, man. From this, I derive that Skeeter is not some bit player. Skeeter is actually the one who operates the Honka Burger cult. Skeeter tells people what's what, and they do what he tells them to do.
Jim, it's very funny that you made that observation, because there's an episode later in the show where it is revealed that Skeeter is actually a super genius with 190 IQ.
Yep. Yeah, that's the cover story they give him. Because otherwise, where did he get the billions of dollars? Where did he get the mansion, huh?
Guess what? It gives Doug anxiety.
Yeah, I'll fucking bet. This whole thing stinks to high heaven.
Okay, so he orders the food, and then he waits for it to come, and then Skeeter brings him to a table full of friends that we never see for the rest of the show ever.
Yeah, no, they're just generic people wiggling back and forth.
Hold up, can I make, before we get to the friends and before we get to the conversation, can I make one point about the salad bar? That being that the salad from the salad bar was for pork chop. And that's fine. Like, great. He's the smart character in the show. However, pork chop is eating with the salad bar spoon. So he is like taking...
Just a dog eating like straight from the salad bar.
Yeah, using the salad bar utensils, right? So he's just sitting there fucking like... And I think it was like... Was it like a liquid too? So he might have just been eating ranch dressing, right? So like he's just sitting there with a ladle, like drinking ranch dressing out of the salad bar.
I don't see the problem with that.
Right, yeah, good point. No, I'm sorry. I can see why you guys walked over that and why we need to move on to the next part.
Yeah, that's completely fine. And that, like, especially given the bit that happens next featuring the announcement that beets are nature's candy. Like, these people have seen weirder shit.
Extremely like, Bible-ass shit called beets that's nature's true. Candy.
Was Doug like a Christian show?
I'll get into this later, but yes. But they couldn't like make it a Christian show because, you know, it's like it's on Nickelodeon. But like one of the details you see is that like when it's Sunday, Doug's wearing like church clothes, and the entire show has a very like Christian message to it. It's like if you do the right thing, you'll eventually get rewarded, which is like generally the moral throughout the entire like series.
Yeah.
Your anxiety is pointless. All things will work out just fine as long as you are a good boy. Through act of your dog, you will be saved.
So, take us back. We're sitting at the table with Skeeter and Doug's new great friend who knows the secret language at Honka Burger, and they're two or three, like, non-player characters.
Yes, just straight up background meat.
And then he sees Patricia Mayonnaise.
Patty Mayonnaise.
Please, we haven't gotten her name yet. As of right now, she's just the first girl who Doug has seen.
Wow. I think there was a girl at the table. There was like a...
She was wiggling in a way that indicated she was background meat.
Fair. Oh, okay. But yeah, so he sees her through the window.
Sorry, one last thing to bring up about the sidebar. Skeeter goes, a vegetarian dog, and then Doug goes, oh, it's just a phase, which tells you the political leanings of the show. Like,
yeah, good point. Very good point.
Yeah, that was a little weird. So anyway, we meet Patty Mayonnaise, who will be a very important part of the show as Doug's immediate love interest. She's very important to the show. What do we learn about her immediately?
Not a whole lot, other than Doug has a crush on her, and she's just, like, constantly running from scene to scene. That's it.
Like, as far as I can tell, she's very much templated off the Peanuts model, wherein there was, I forget who the hell it was, who Charlie Brown was always just losing his mind over. And the entire gimmick being that, yeah, no, she's not entirely sure if you exist.
She's also always alone. Like, she comes to the Honker Burger twice in this episode, and she eats by herself, and no one talks to her. So, like, that was just kind of sad, right? Like, they got this whole table of, like, supposed friends, and Skeeter knows her, but she's just, like, not invited, right?
This is boys' chat.
But, like, there's women at the table, I'm pretty sure.
My running theory, again, is that, as we know that Skeeter is head of the cult, knower of the way and the light, who is in charge of making sure that the new meat is properly processed, that Patty has in some way failed the cult in the past, and as such, he's in charge of making sure that nobody too important gets attached to her, so that if she was to go missing, well, it's a shame what happened to that girl. No, nobody's talked to her in a while.
Damn. All right.
Also, another example of a funny joke is during the beat sequence when Skeeter says they are nature's candy, don't you know? Like, the kids just start laughing.
Right, and then Skeeter does, like, a juggling thing and throws it in his mouth. Physical comedy.
Oh, man.
That's not a joke. That's just a thing that has happened. That's just, okay.
Because, like, another thing that you notice in the show is not a lot of people ever laugh.
They laughed at that!
Yeah, they laughed at that. That's it.
They laugh at that, and in Doug's nightmares, they will laugh and or yell at him.
True. And I guess it was only the non-player characters that were
it's
laughing.
It's a very, very pure tanical show.
Yeah, the only joy comes from Doug's pain, which is, this is not just a Christian show. This is some real evangelical shit right here.
So Patty arrives, and then is that when, why does Doug get out of the chair? Is it to go get his food? He like gets up?
Yes. He gets up to go get his food.
And he's, like, racing Skeeter to go get it because they want to out-polite each other.
Right, because they have to prove that they're the alpha who picks up the food.
Right.
So on the way, Doug slips on a ketchup packet, and, like, it slips him all the way down the Honker Burger, and then lands on the shoes of Roger Klotz.
Well, well, what have we here?
And what do we know about Roger?
Roger Klotz is a huge badass. You can tell because he wears a white t-shirt under a black leather jacket and carries his cat with him everywhere he goes.
And suede shoes.
One point of order I'd like to mention about Roger that I didn't know until I started doing research for the show is that Roger is 13 years old because it took him 2 years to graduate the sixth grade, or 3 years to graduate the sixth grade. So Roger's going through puberty through this entire like show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's... God.
That's why he's so much bigger than everybody else. That's probably why his voice does that thing that it does.
Oh, yeah. It cracks. Gets all high and, like, he has, like, a little cackly laugh.
Roger is jacking off. This is canon.
All the time. That's why his hands are in his pockets.
Oh, no. Like, this is... As Skeeter walks over to try to help Doug with the interaction with Roger that's not going well because Roger is not pleased about the fact that ketchup has gotten on his shoes, Skeeter says a sentence that is the most obvious code anyone has ever said.
Still on this.
Nothing worse than a cold, soggy stinker.
Nothing worse.
He's right. When he's right, he's right.
My man Skeeter.
He is laughing because he knows.
What's very funny about this scene is he ruins Roger's shoes and then immediately takes Roger's advice.
Right, yeah. Roger is like, I'll tell you how you can make it up to me, and brings Doug outside, to which Skeeter's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, oh, just, I guess he's dead.
Yeah, I guess they're friends now. I guess, I mean, Roger's kind of a bully, but I guess Doug and him are best friends. And they just, like, ignore him. They're just like, yeah, see you later, dude. And don't forget your food. Don't forget, I'll take your food. Don't worry about it. Like, Doug doesn't take his food. Like, Skeeter has won this race and has the food and then just fucking books it when Doug goes out to get, like, tricked by Roger. So, yeah, so Roger takes him outside and says, so, Doug, I have an idea of how you can not only make it up to me, but be the biggest hero in Bluffington.
He doesn't even say make it up to me. He just says, hey, Doug, here's some great advice for your social life.
Oh, you're right.
The shoe thing doesn't even come up again.
Yeah, no, it just left there.
Like, Doug fucks his day up, and it's just like, oh, this guy's going to give me the best advice possible. And even the dog is just like, dude, come on. He's like fucking with you. But no, he can't.
Is that with a dog?
Yeah, the dog rolls his eyes when he's describing like what's about to happen.
We're going to go take a step out back and we're going to talk. Nothing's worse than a cold, soggy stinker. And then all that happens when the guy who's being clearly set up as this giant, intimidating, bullying presence comes up is that he puts together the most obtuse way to bully someone known to man.
That actually inconveniences himself.
Like, it's just the most, like, circuitous horse shit. First off, he summons three minions. They're just standing by while Roger comes up with this asinine, yeah, you need to go hunt a nematode and then everybody'll love ya.
Yeah, they say, Doug, look, you're going to have to be the town hero and find the first nematode ever. And Doug's like, what does a nematode look like? He's like, they're big and slimy. And then they repeat the words big and slimy for like 15 seconds. And then Doug's like, I'm going to get a nematode. They say that though they're slimy, ugly things that live in Stinson's pond. And nematodes are parasitic worms. I'm giving the show way too much credit here, but I looked up what nematodes are, and they represent 90% of all life on the ocean floor. So they're actually one of the most common animals on the planet.
Yeah, no, like, if you go into, like, unfiltered water and shit, like, ponds and whatnot, nematodes are a common way of, getting gross parasitic infections and shit like that. So, yes, in fact, stomping around a random pond in the middle of nowhere that hasn't been treated or anything is probably a good way to pick up a couple of nematodes.
Well, so what stuck out to me about this scene is that there's a section when Doug's just like, oh, is this going to be dangerous? And Roger goes, what do you care? To me, it's like, that's exactly what I would care about if I was to go hunt something slimy that no one's ever seen before.
I'm going to go to a pond where no one else is around in, like, the dead of morning. And I'm going to do it with these strangers that I've only met once before, and I've actually, like, ruined one of the shoes of the people I'm meeting. So, like, it's... God damn.
So this is the grand story arc. If we remember the name of the episode, Doug Bags a Nematode, we have arrived.
One thing I want to mention is that Roger kind of fucks himself over because he's just like, meet us at the pond at 7 in the morning. Like, there's no reason for that.
Yeah, and all his minions are like, ugh. He's like, shut up, do it.
The second thing is, he tells Doug that if he chickens out, he'll be sorry. And what's funny to me is that it would be really funny if Doug actually did chicken out.
Oh, yeah, that rule.
And it would have also, right, like, went into his, like, one of his two or three character traits, which is has anxiety. It's just like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to stay at home and play video games.
Yes, you're right. It would have played into his anxiety. Yeah, and oh, yeah, totally. He, like, just totally agrees to go with this plan. He's not like, oh, this sounds weird. I hope nothing goes wrong. He's just like, yeah, obviously I'll do it. Obviously.
Yeah, he doesn't even have a second of doubt at any point. completely oblivious, completely trusting, just like a dog. He's like more of a dog than Porkchop is.
Maybe him and Porkchop are reversed. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's maybe the Porkchop is the owner.
Doug doesn't make any decisions whatsoever in this episode. Like, a decision requires there two branching paths, at least two branching paths, right? There is no path for Doug. Doug just follows the plot just wordlessly and gormlessly, just 100% to the end. He doesn't make a single decision.
Can we just hurry up through the actual substance of it, because the substance is boring and bullshit?
So, okay. So let's move a bit to the point where he's actually going to go on this hunt, right? And he gets up early. And so remember, Jim, when I told you, I was like, that I was like, you got to remind me of this, of like his parents like being like supportive about weird things, right? So when he leaves with like this random net that he has, and he like leaves at 7 a.m, his dad says, kids today have so many more advantages than we ever had.
Apropos of nothing.
Like, Doug's parents just are looking at this like, nah, nothing going on here. Nothing right. We should ask about, nothing we should be concerned by. He's probably just wandering off to talk to that nice man next door who doesn't have any kids that exhibited interest in our kid, which he actually fucking is.
Dear Mr. Funny, here are two questions that you could have asked. One, what's a nematode? Two, who's Roger?
Three, where are you going? When will you be back? Right? So, okay, so that happens, and then his mom says, be happy. and that's it.
Just cult ass shit.
She
just says, be happy. And it's like, I mean, okay, great, but I don't really know what to do with that, right? I mean, it's just like, yeah, okay.
You have the two sides of boomer pathology displayed in their larval state. You have the person who's being grumpy about the fact that his kid is not a hideous ball of anxiety. Don't worry, he is a hideous ball of anxiety. Job well done, Mr. Funny.
You just don't know because you never talked to your child.
Yeah, you've never paid any attention. You see what looks like something you associate with your kid being happy, and you're pissed off about it.
And also, just quick side note, he also represents the boomer stereotype of making $600,000 a year doing a menial job. Go on.
Oh, just an utterly bullshit job. And then the other side of the core boomer pathology of just saying, be happy. Like, no, you're experiencing a temporary moment of some sort of displeasure. Just bury that shit. Don't try to work through it. Don't try to comprehend what's going on. Just choose a different emotional setting, because I don't want to have to deal with you.
Yeah, you have anxiety? Have you tried, you know, not having anxiety?
Comically dusts off hands.
Doug, you should smile more. You look better.
God.
God damn it. Yeah, so, all right. So, as Doug has a very emotional and meaningful conversation with his parents, then he leaves to go to this, what is it, some pond.
He runs into Mr. Dink again before he leaves, like before he gets to the pond. Mr. Dink eventually gives him directions, but before telling him that Doug can borrow the videos at any time. And then Doug really hates those tapes for some reason. Like, he has a very visceral reaction to those tapes, even though it took up, like, I don't know, 2-3 minutes of his day. He's like, ugh, I don't want to do that. Why? I'm turning into Jim. I believe Jim now. Jim's right.
Yeah, no. Mr. Dink has a lot of tapes that Doug can borrow, I suspect.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, shit. So he makes it. So anyway, so Doug, like, gets there somehow. We assume he walks. He doesn't even take his bike, right? He, like, walks to this pond.
Yeah, Mrs. Dink steps in and just says, okay, go this way.
Right.
And on the way there, he's walking and he sees Patty Mayonnaise, and then he trips over a perfectly level surface.
If you get horny for a single second, you will fall face first in front of a bully. This is canon.
It's a very Christian message. You can never be horny.
All suffering has the root of either horniness or wanting to be popular.
So this is probably the part that, like, this is like the meat of the episode. But I think, Jim, this is what you're talking about, of like just kind of skip over it because it's boring. Basically, this is like this convoluted plan where Roger tries to trick him, and he's like, oh, just make this sound and there will be a nematode that comes out. And it doesn't work, obviously. And then Porkchop like gets in the pond and has a bunch of mud on him and then pretends to be a nematode. And Roger's like, oh no, I'll get a better nematode. And that's like all that happens, right? He's like, if you can get that kind of nematode, I can get a better one. And then
yeah, the bullies just appear out of nowhere after Doug spends like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes making like an absurd mating call. And they're just like, ha ha, we got you so good, Doug. Ha ha ha.
Right.
Just the most obtuse bullying plan known to mankind. And then it's undone by the fact that none of them have ever seen a dog before.
Like a dirty dog. Like they've never seen a dog. Like it's like a Superman Clark Kent glasses thing. You just throw some mud on a dog and they're just like, oh shit, it's a monster.
Where'd the dog go?
That monster ate that dog.
Doug, before you leave, don't forget to find your dog. I mean, okay, this is just like, it's just like a little trope. Like, I can forgive that as like, you know, this is just our little slapstick joke. But it's just very, you know, cliche.
There were two other cartoons released around this time. It was Ren and Stimpy and Rugrats. And I just wanted to point out that the show about literal babies respected kids' intelligence more than Doug did.
Yes.
Fuck yeah. A show for me.
Keep an eye out for the Rugrats diapies.
That'll be the next podcast.
Yes. The disease I have with Doug, Mike has with Rugrats.
Right. Literally, when I was on an online dating site, the tag that I had for my online dating site was, I can't remember all the streets I take to get to work every day, but I can remember all the parents' names from Rugrats.
Podcasts are inherently audio medium. So, gentle viewer, I'm going to have to ask you to imagine my facial expression right now.
It's
Mike
good.
Knows what it is. Sam knows what it is.
You're like, good job, Mike. You thought of something creative to do, and I'm proud of you.
You're doing a double thumbs up as you slowly unzip your pants.
You're logging on to your dating profile to steal it.
As we fucking speak.
Yeah, all this is true.
This is all canon, and you can't say it isn't.
This show is canon.
Oh, God. So, anyway, our good friend, like, after they've run off, like, do a debrief at the Honka Burger, where Porkchop, still covered in mud, does a sexy dance, and Skeeter is all, wow, I've never seen a nematode this close before, because Skeeter did not get where he is today by not taking things he's presented at face value.
Also, being able to conveniently overlook things.
Yeah, no, just there's a dog doing a sexy dance on the table. You know what? There's all sorts of things happen here after hours. Don't ask questions.
But hold up. So not only was the dog eating directly from the salad bar, but now covered in swamp mud and probably diseased, he's like rolling around on the table at the Honka Burger.
Yeah, he doesn't clean the dog off. He doesn't clean the dog off until he gets back from the Honka Burger and back to his house. They just let that fucking gross-ass dog into the Honka Burger and he's dancing on the table. Like I can just imagine the janitor in the corner being like, what the fuck? Like, why?
Honka Burger's gonna get shut down.
Oh, Honka Burger's not gonna get shut down. They know.
It's too valuable to the town's infrastructure.
Little Saint Honka Burger.
Yes. And then Doug goes and squirts all over Patty Mayonnaise.
Yeah, let's get to that, because literally, I think I just squirted ketchup on a girl. I must have squirted you. No, you have wonderful aim. I'm quoting verbatim too. That's I'm not fucking with you here. This is what the show tells you.
And he gets it right on her burg.
And Doug is just apologizing constantly. There has never been a more transparent metaphor for someone's first sexual experience.
Yes.
I must have squirted you.
No, it's okay, really.
I'm sorry.
No, really, it's okay.
No crying now.
Anyone?
that's normal, right? I'm normal. I'm pretty normal.
We've all had our perfectly normal experiences at the Honka Burger. Let's all order a big wet one.
There's nothing worse than a soggy stinker.
Nothing worse than a soggy stinker.
Unless you have wonderful aim.
Let's make that the episode title. Dead Bags and Nematode in quotes. There's nothing worse than a soggy stinger.
Ooh, there it is.
God.
Boom!
I like it. But yeah, so that's what happens. They have a very sexy... Oh, Patty May is eating by herself again.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
Like, they don't ever invite... No one invites
her.
She's
just like, can I please join you?
And isn't she like... Don't we find out later that she's like crazy popular at the school? Isn't she like the head athlete? Like, captain of all the teams?
I don't remember. Yeah, I think she's very athletic.
Yeah.
I don't know how... I don't remember how popular
she is.
She's
not in with the Skeeter's inner circle and therefore must eat alone. That or she's a high priestess or some shit like that. And sitting next to her is some grand... Like, we'll work more on this as we see more of the show. We can't expect everything to be in the first episode. Just most of it.
One other thing real quick. When Skeeter joins them under the table, this is the first instance where he honk honks.
Yeah.
Like, he does it with no context and no one says anything. And he's just like... And we're just like, all right.
This MF just honk?
I'm just like, are you okay, Skeeter?
And then he goes home and washes the dog off, finally, and then writes in his journal.
I gotta hold you up here, because as he's washing the dog off and having, like, Mr. Dink charges out of the bushes, shouting, aha, as he snaps a picture.
So that says that he's been in there for a while.
And he's done this before.
And he's been in there since before Doug arrived, because otherwise Doug would have been like, why'd you get in that bush? So he's just been hanging out in that bush with a camera for who knows how long. Yeah, no, that's what he does. But anyway, his explanation, which Doug accepts just out of hand, is
completely face value.
Yeah, he's just like, I thought it was a nematode. Oh. And Doug's like, yeah, it isn't. And that's it.
Yep.
So then he writes in his and then after he says that, he like fucking punches Doug. He's just like, and punches Doug in the arm.
He's like, don't tell your parents about this, Douglas.
Yeah, and still has never introduced himself to his parents. Maybe he did off camera, but maybe. Let's assume he did. I thought nematodes were supposed to be in the park, but like, this is just Doug's backyard. Like, do you assume that they come to Doug's backyard too? I don't know. And yeah, I don't know. It's wild.
You can hear what I'm thinking, can't you?
Maybe Mr. Dink is not real. Maybe Mr. Dink is just a figment of Doug's imagination.
Maybe Mr. Dink appears on some registries.
So he's like writing in his journal, and then in like the final shot, it zooms out and shows Roger is still in the park trying to find a nematode. But when it zooms out, it shows that, I assume this park was, like, deep in the woods, right? But it zooms out, it's at someone's backyard. Like, they've been sitting out there, he's been sitting out there, like, fucking screaming and howling at the moon for, like, 12 hours. And it's in someone's backyard, right?
Hello, cuckoo! Hello, cuckoo! Come on, nematodes!
I think Roger is trying to do ritual sorcery to counteract the demon that was set on him earlier by Doug's sorcery. I think that's the only way we can make any sense of this, because otherwise somebody would have said, kid, why are you yelling in my backyard? Now, they're used to people trying to perform ritual magic at that pond.
True. And you know what? He's also wearing his new suede shoes into the swamp.
Yeah,
the ones
that
he got
just,
pissed
dumb.
At Doug. The one that, like, Doug squirted ketchup on him, and he's like, fuck you, funny. But then he's just like, I'm gonna walk around in this swamp for 12 hours.
Also, I think that's supposed to be a joke to end the episode, and it's not.
It's very good and funny, like the rest of the show.
It's incredibly humorous, and we all laughed a great deal.
But I will say that the closing credits song fucking rules. and I want to, like, it's okay for reference, dear reader. It basically sounds like someone is beatboxing while wearing a speech jammer and squeaking a rubber ducky. And like, it's good. And like, I want to hear a trap remix of this song.
So let me read you straight from the Wikipedia, and we can go on to closing thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. What do you got?
So Jenkins was insistent that the series would have a purpose and instructed writers to annotate each script with a moral. The show's unusual soundtrack consists largely of mouth noises.
I mean, same.
So this gets in, this sort of gets into what I've been alluding to basically the entire episode, is that like the show gets rid of jokes in a story and any sort of point just to like present a moral, right? And that's fine. But the problem is the morals are awful. Okay, so the moral of the story should be like, hey, don't trust every asshole that says anything to you. But that's not the moral of the story, because Doug does that and is ends up rewarded. The moral of the story is bad people eventually get what's coming to them, which is I don't think it's a good thing to tell people.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I mean, it's the most 90s possible moral, though. Just, you know, sit true. Around long enough and eventually everything will work out fine. I mean, after all, it worked out for us, your parents.
Right. It reinforces, like, the very Christian nature of the show, because if assholes eventually get what's coming to them, like, that's their entire, like, view on the afterlife.
Yeah.
There is no need to bring about justice. There is no need to bring about equality.
You don't have to make any choices.
Yeah, you don't have to make any choices. You don't have to make any sacrifices. The extent of what you can do is look at somebody else having fun and going, eh, kids these days, little shits.
Be happy.
Be happy.
Yes, be happy. The other thing I wanted to bring up is I had a revelation while I was watching this episode on maybe why the show has stuck with me for so long. So Doug is a very, like, wholesome but stupid Christian character, right? And he lives in a fantasy world. Now, it's a fantasy world where nothing changes and is extremely boring, but it's still a fantasy world because, like, nothing really bad ever happens to Doug. Doug doesn't have any real life events. Like, everything that he has that happens to him is just undone by the end of the episode, right? And what's very funny to me as another stupid person is to imagine Doug in any real life situation whatsoever. My original thought was, oh, imagine Doug doing something lewd or depraved, but no, just imagine Doug doing anything. Like Doug watching a Marvel like movie and then not getting it, and then having to Google like the plot to figure out how like what was actually going on there. Or like Doug watching a porno, then immediately going to the ER because he thinks he has an STD.
So there's sure it's easy to say like negative things about Doug that like he you know like he doesn't do anything, like you're totally right.
For more negative things on Doug, please see the next several episodes of this podcast, dear viewer, coming here for episode one.
But like I think there are like positive aspects to it too. Like I think that like it shows that like anxiety is normal and is like should be taken seriously, and like, well, I guess they don't show the
negative side effects of anxiety. They just show the anxiety.
Yeah, like the You're message right. is a very much about anxiety is a thing that it's normal to have if you're a teenager. Nothing about what you actually do with the anxiety or how you should react to it. Just the statement that if you're feeling anxious, that's normal. You're normal. Just sit there and wait for the bad things to happen to the bad people, and it'll all be fine in the end. Now stop bugging your parents. You annoy them when you look happy.
I mean, it does show that, like, here's a potential coping mechanism of, like, writing in your journal, right? And, I mean, I feel like that is positive, but I don't think that that's what people took from the show, right?
I don't think people took anything from the show. Well, aside from you two, who are clearly the people who it's been living in the longest.
My brain has absorbed the entirety of the show, and it now dictates every decision I've ever made in my life.
Did you slip on a ketchup packet in order
That's how I impressed every girlfriend I ever had, is just squirt her with ketchup. It's like how good my aim is. Please get me.
And you know, I gotta say, 9 out of 10 times doesn't work out, but when it works out, it's the greatest.
The other thing I wanted to do is my grand theory about, like, what happens to Doug in the future. Is that okay to do right now, or should we save it for a later episode?
Go for it. Let's put it
all
with our
on
initial
the table
theory.
Let's
here.
Expunge all of our personal demons here and now so that
okay.
we can replace them with new, stronger demons.
So backing up a little bit, remember when I said, like, Doug has no, like, real tragedies in his life, and it's very funny to imagine him, like, being in a real-world situation?
Yeah.
So, put him in our timeline, think about like the two worst things that have happened in our lives. Just imagine Bluffington on the morning of September 11th, 2001.
Okay.
And just imagine Doug reacting to 9/11. Like, how would that character even process it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think he would,
dear
like
diary?
There's no tragedy in this world. There's no like crime, really.
Do you think that he would like ignore
immediately
it,
or... join the military? Maybe.
That is true. He
just
would
like
definitely
the terrorists have attacked us.
Yeah, or the recruiting officer comes to the school and he's one of those kids who just immediately is, oh, I guess this is what I have to do now. Because somebody in a vague position of authority told me that this is what I should do.
I think he wants to join the military, but has too much anxiety to do it, and he ends up not doing it.
Oh, Skeeter absolutely enlists.
Yes, maybe.
You think so?
Maybe.
Skeeter was at Abu Ghraib. Honk, honk!
That's our last episode title.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is... So, Doug is 11 in 1991, so that means he was born in 1980, which means by 2007, that makes him 27.
Okay.
So, what I think happens to Doug is that Doug goes to college, he goes to, like, some state school and majors in, like, something useless like I did. And
no,
then...
he majored in journalism, come on.
No, he didn't major in journalism.
He absolutely majored in journalism.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. He majors in journalism, but he can't find a journalism job after college. So his dad hooks him up with some like pencil pushing job at like Walmart corporate or whatever. And then 2007 happens. 2007, I mean, that's the release of the iPhone. So even barring the financial crash, Doug's dad's screwed because there's no reason to have a photographer after like everybody has like a pretty good fucking camera in their pockets. The second thing that happens is, this is a title of a Doug episode, Doug gets radicalized by the alt-right. So I think Doug goes through his entire life without actually ever having a real girlfriend. I think he infatuates with Patty Mayonnaise so much and so long that it like totally warps his ability to talk like with women like as a normal human being. And then he goes on like one or two dates with Patty. Doesn't really work out because he hasn't develop the mechanisms to like, you know, interact and deal with rejection and all that stuff. So he becomes just like a shut-in nerd that has like a pretty boring but okay job that just gets totally devastated in 2007. And then he just becomes like a Reddit incel warrior because he has all the characteristics going into like being an incel. He like thinks he's a nice guy. He thinks he's deserved everything because like he's always does the right thing. So, and every time he does the right thing, he gets rewarded. So like, I deserve like all these things that are coming to me, which is the exact, like that's the entire MO of the incels. Second, he also has like an obsession with his face and his appearance, which is also the incel MO. Like there's an entire episode about how he thinks his nose is too big.
The only thing I'm going to say here, like you show your points well, but like at the same time, I mean, come on, he's 11 and he's nervous about stuff. Like that happens to everyone.
Yeah, the question is, does he ever have something that knocks him out of being 11 years old? Because this entire mental pathology that we're describing here is the pathology of eternally being trapped at age 11 and just assuming your parents are going to cover everything forever, and that if that doesn't happen, well, bad things happen to bad people, and I'm not a bad people, so something is wrong with the world. So I have to assume if Doug becomes the good person that the showrunners assure us that he is, it has to be through the effort of something bad happens to him that he learns how to handle and figures out a larger version of the world than just, oh god, my anxiety, oh god, do I look perfect, which is why I look forward to the episode that I have no doubt will occur at some point, the gang puts Pork Chop down.
Maybe that's in the fucked Disney up one. Disney episodes that come
later.
Yeah,
we haven't seen the Disney one, so if this podcast goes on long enough, we can all experience this together. I sent Mike some like episode descriptions, and they get wild. They undo a lot of the weird stuff. Like, Roger is in the Nickelodeon one, is, as far as I can tell, the only poor person in Bluffington. And then he gets super rich in the Disney one. Like, he wins the lottery or gets inheritance or something.
Huh.
And then the Funnies have like another kid that they named Dirtbike.
okay. Yeah, so okay, definitely...
that confirms the family is right wing. Okay.
Yes, that's what I was just gonna say. That's exactly what I was thinking. Motherfucking wait, why do they do they go into why they
I
did
don't
this?
Know. I just skimmed the wiki about it.
Dirt, that's awesome.
Dirtbike funny.
Dirtbike, didn't you say that the reason why they named him Doug in the first place was because, like, what was his other name and it sounded too fancy? It sounded too, like, unrelatable?
It was, like, Brian or something like that?
Yeah, it was
that.
Brian. That's what it was.
It was just some whack-ass, like, normal name.
And they said it was too fancy, and so they named him Doug. And now here comes motherfucking Dirtbike. That owns.
I'm sorry, I'm just picturing... Mrs. Mayonnaise, that completely changes the dynamic, doesn't it? Mrs. Funny giving birth to a fully formed Dirtbike. And just, well, what are we going to name it? Well, we were going to call it Doug too, but...
and she just starts going vroom, vroom, vroom. God damn it.
Like placenta Dirtbike. Full of oil and machine parts.
Just comes out and it's just like half cyborg, and Doug's dad is just like, whoa.
Phil, I think I'm getting toxic shock, Phil. Phil. Tell Dirtbike I love him.
Phil, get the camera.
Mr. Dink just quietly muttering to himself, looking through the wall with some special binoculars, saying, very expensive, but worth it.
Okay, so... for reference, for when we do the next episode, episode 2 is titled... Oh, and we should say, this is the one episode that is a full-length 20-minute episode. Every other episode is two short episodes, like was popular at the time.
Also, this is episode 2, even though it happens chronologically first.
Yeah, it's like very
it's
artsy.
It's fucked up.
Now we're going home stuck. Now we're in territory I recognize.
So, episode 2, and I guess technically 1... is called Doug Can't Dance / Doug Gets Busted. So those are the two. And I am very curious to see what that comes with. I've got all kinds... I haven't watched this in so long. I know Sam remembers every bit of it, uh-huh. I'm sure. and I'm sure Jim doesn't remember anything about it either. But I'm excited to see where we go for it. Until next time, everyone. Thanks for... fucking hanging out with us.
Bye. Like, share, and subscribe.
Bye.
Bye.